This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul, John McDonald, and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. I'm Isabel Abuhul and my co-host is Penny McKenzie, and we're having such a treat today with our wonderful guests throughout the show. And it's now a real pleasure to welcome Yara Badri, who's lead reviewer on our Book of the Week, Before the Fall by Noah Hawley. And Yara Badri has recently joined the Emirates Literature Foundation as head of communications and marketing. Welcome, Yara.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And thanks
always
for coming
happy to
in.
Talk about books.
Thanks. Yeah, you have such a passion for books, and that is why you're here. Because all of us who come into this show would not be here unless we had that passion. So it is brilliant. So would you like to lead off with Before the Fall by Noah Hawley? Tell us a little bit about the plot without giving away any spoilers, please.
Yeah. It's always difficult with thrillers, actually, to review them, because so much of it is plot-based. And actually, generally, I'm not a reader of this genre. I tend to gravitate towards character-driven books more than plot-driven books. But, you know, I was pleasantly surprised, because I think he manages the balance between plot and character really well. And so I got curious and did a bit of digging about Noah Hawley himself. And he's an interesting guy. So I just want to talk a little bit about him before we talk about the book. So he's a fiction writer, he's a screenwriter, he's a soon-to-be director, and he is the author that transformed a classic film by the Coen brothers called Fargo into a TV series. And that TV series is known for its suspense. It's known for these kind of unexpected turns and twists. And
I have to say, Fargo, the TV series was really good.
Yes.
And contrary to every other person on the planet, I loathed Fargo, the movie.
Really?
Really loathed it. So I was. Yeah. So it was really nice to actually see it and enjoy it in another in another medium.
Well, actually, it was very successful, or has been very successful, in the sense that the first series was nominated for 18 Emmys and won for Best Miniseries. So he was catapulted into kind of into fame as a result of that, despite the fact that he was actually has been writing novels, has been writing screenplays for a very long time. And kind of very topically, this morning Stephen King tweeted about Fargo. So I'm going to read what Stephen King tweeted, which is, "Most TV is cafeteria food. Fargo's three seasons have been gourmet meals. I'd love one more." So, I mean, high praise.
High praise.
To get a tweet about your work from Stephen King is priceless.
There's also a quote on the back of the book from the Irish Independent newspaper. "There are some books that stay with you long after you've read them. The characters are so real, and because of this, their fates matter. Before the Fall is one of these books." And I would agree with that.
Yeah, me too.
That I got very concerned about the little boy. JJ, and I really took to Scott, because he's a very imperfect human being. You know, he's arrived at 40 and his life is in such a mess. And he's an artist. And he lives on Martha's Vineyard, this island where all the rich people live. And he a chance meeting at the farmer's market with the wife of the TV magnate, and they go and see his work, and that is the only reason why he's in on this plane. And again, to read from the back, this is the story. "A private jet plunges into the sea with only two survivors. The young son of the family who chartered the plane, now heir to a TV mogul's fortune, and a man who only chanced to be on board at all. Down on his luck, artist Scott Burrows, the hero who saved the boy's life. But nothing is simple when big money and even bigger reputations are at stake. In the media storm that follows, questions start to be asked. Is Scott Burrows as innocent as he seems?" And that is exactly what you get, isn't
it? Yes, it is.
I mean, I was really doubting him, particularly because of the artwork that he did.
Yeah.
He has a whole series of artworks.
But Isabel, the only thing, though, with that is that he writes in the first person. So for the parts when you're listening to Scott's voice, okay, and he tells you very clearly at the very beginning of the book. So to me, I couldn't doubt him because
I've read books where the protagonist is telling you the story, and it has been completely turned on its head throughout the book. Yeah. So I don't ever trust. It's someone's report.
Yeah. You know, they're reporting. So sort of like the unreliable narrator sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I get that. But I didn't feel that with Scott. Mm. I felt that it was...
But he could have been too good to be true in a way.
In his own mind.
Yes, yeah. And I love the backstory of his childhood and why he took up swimming.
That was brilliant.
That was really...
Yeah. So... just so listeners know, there is a plane crash that starts the book off. And as Isabel has mentioned, there were two survivors. And Scott, the struggling artist, saves the four-year-old boy by doing this epic, heroic swim to shore. And when we hear the backstory about Scott, we hear about when he was a young boy and he watched... I think his name was Jack LaLanne.
Who I think is a real
person? Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm not sure. I'm actually going to check it up.
Who was an older man that did all these swimming feats.
Pulling a car across the, and he saw him.
He saw him swimming from Alcatraz when they were visiting San Francisco, I think. Mm. And that has stuck in his memory, that kind of, epic feat, that your body is not a limitation. And
mind over matter thing, wasn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, he does this epic swim and saves this four-year-old boy.
Against the odds. Yeah. Because the plane crashed in the sea and they survive. And, the reasons why they survive are not apparent. And I'm not going to say why they survive. The water impact.
Yes.
But they do.
Do you know?
It was the way that he, how he heard the boy as well. That was the other thing.
But that first bit, the whole time that they were in the sea, and the waves were crashing down and his thought processes, that was, to me, like my favourite part of the book. Mm. I thought the descriptions were... I really was looking forward
and also being that situation where it's completely surreal and then his mind over matter to get, with a dislocated shoulder, to swim to shore. And the bit about the North Star, he had that... The clouds not cleared, that would have been the end of them.
He would have had no sense of direction.
No. So, and I think all these things made it for me so real that we hear every so often about people surviving the impossible. The odds are impossible. But what Noah Hawley does so well is gives us, as the story progresses, bit by bit, we get little snippets of information that make things possible. So I really liked Scott Burrows, the main character who's basically telling the story, and I really absolutely hated Bill, who is this loud-mouthed
news anchor
for a fictitious station. But if you read the reviews, they say that it's very much based on Fox News and the main anchor there, and how the father of JJ took him out of obscurity and made him this huge voice, but they've discovered just before the flight and things like that he's been up to all sorts of illegal ways of finding information, and he's going to lose his job. It would have been the end of him. It would have been, he was going to be taken off to say he was ill. That's what would have happened had the plane landed when it should have done. But of course, then he's on air 24/7.
I mean, there are 11 people on that plane, and you know, there are lots of reasons for all of them being a victim of foul play, and so the mystery of why that plane crashed becomes, quite rich in terms of speculation, in terms of, you know, lots of conspiracy theories happen.
But wasn't that what this whole book was about? It was about the spin doctor way that the whole, well, it wasn't the spin, the way it was spun.
Yeah.
The whole media frenzy kind of.
But it was started by Bill, who was saying, you know, this must be an act. Of you know, this has happened. This is not just an accident, and someone is behind it. Someone, you know,
but it was very conspiracy theory driven, and really quite nasty. The way it's exactly the way you see sort of pulp news being churned out at the moment, where there is no regard for people's privacy. And interestingly,
all truth. You know, this is talk about what do we have? What is it? Fake news. And this was I think. Really resonated with me in this time of fake news, where also and spin and all of that. That actually the damage that could be done when they don't have any facts at all. It's just, you know, the black box is not recovered, and so on. So it is. And that bit, when they do recover the black box, that's just
that was well timed, wasn't it?
Very well timed.
And I think in that part where it's quite late in the novel where they recover the black box and the investigator is listening to what's being said, you can tell that Noah Hawley is a screenwriter, because it's almost like this split screen development of information coming out and switch to another situation where Scott is in having a live interview
with this ghastly man.
And it goes back and forth, and it feels like you're watching a movie in that technique of
very,
writing.
Very, very visual. Yeah. And also the paintings. I think they confiscate all of Scott Burrow's paintings, which are all of these epic disasters. Mm. And again, that's very visual, but they have it all in this hangar with the bits from the plane. And
again, you can see that, can't you?
You can imagine. You know, they're obviously attached by things from the ceiling of the hangar, and they're just sort of slightly moving, and they are all disasters. And you're thinking, why did he paint, including a plane crash? Why did he paint this? Where is he getting his, you know, what is making him suddenly produce a whole series of disasters, unless he's guilty?
And then you find out, when you finally find out the reason why, it's so poignant.
Well, I don't know. Let's come back to that point after this short break.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and we are in our Book of the Week, and we're reviewing a wonderful book, in my opinion, Before the Fall by Noah Hawley. I've got a question for our listeners to win a copy of this book, which is going to be made into a movie fairly soon, or it's definitely an option for a movie. So, in Greek mythology, what was the name of the boy who flew too close to the sun and his wings, sadly, the wax that was holding his wings together melted? His name, send it to 4001, and please put your name. And you know, those Greek mythical tales are some of them. I can remember having a children's book of Greek tales, myths, and loving it, loving all the stories.
I had one too.
This one particularly about this character and his father, and why they, you know, why they make this these wings and to escape, is a particularly moving one. So the name of the boy in Greek mythology who flew too close to the sun and sadly perished. So what are we going to... You've got a little clip for us, haven't you, Yara?
I do. So going back to quite early in the book, after the plane crash and the heroic swim by Scott Burrows, he walks into the hospital with JJ, the four-year-old, and, you know, after this disaster. And this is Noah Hawley reading about that.
Scott bucks the door open with his good shoulder and climbs down, every muscle in his body numb with exhaustion. The morning fog is gone and the warm sun on his back and legs feels almost religious. He helps the boy jump down. Together they limp into the emergency room. The waiting area is mostly empty, and the corner a middle-aged man holds an ice pack to his head, water dripping off his wrist onto the linoleum floor. On the other side of the room, an elderly couple holds hands, their heads close together. From time to time, the woman coughs into a balled-up Kleenex. An intake nurse sits behind glass. Scott limps over to her, the boy holding onto his shirt tails. "Hi," he says. The nurse gives him a quick once-over. Her name tag reads Melanie. Scott tries to imagine what he must look like. All he can think of is Wile E. Coyote after an Acme rocket has exploded in his face. "We were in a plane crash," he says. The words out loud are astonishing. The intake nurse squints at him. "I'm sorry? A plane from Martha's Vineyard, a private plane, we crashed into the sea. I think we're hypothermic, and I can't move my left arm. My collarbone, I think, may be broken. The nurse is still trying to work through it. You crashed in the sea. I swam. I think it was 10 miles, maybe 15. We just came ashore maybe an hour ago. A fisherman drove us here." The words are making him dizzy. "Look," he says, "do you think we could get some help, at least the boy? He's only 4. The nurse looks at the boy, damp, shivering. "Is he your son? If I say yes, will you get us a doctor?" The nurse sniffles. "There's no need to get surly." Scott feels his jaw clenching. "There is actually every need. We were in a plane crash. Get the damn doctor." She stands uncertain. Scott glances over at the ceiling-mounted television. The sound is down, but on screen are images of search and rescue boats on the ocean. A banner headline reads, "Private plane feared lost." "There," says Scott, pointing. "That's us. Will you believe me now?" The nurse looks at the TV. Her reaction is instantaneous. She pushes the intercom button. "Code orange," she says. "I need all available doctors to intake immediately." The cramping in Scott's leg is beyond critical. He says, bucking to the floor, "One would do, probably."
Wow. That is what you get in this book. It is really, really full of tension, full of what's going to happen next in the plot. But I think some of the characters are extremely well drawn as well. I'm like you, Yara. I'm not a great thriller reader, but I couldn't put this book down.
So you were like racing
through. I was racing through it, but I also could not work out. There was so many possibilities that were given to us as it went, and I think Noah Hawley spends a long time writing some of the characters, not all of the characters, but some of them. And I think in this day and age, it really resonated with me when you look at world news, and particularly American news, that what's going on there and how things can be skewed in terms of what media are presenting.
It's very topical in that way.
Yes. Yeah.
And it represents that. I mean, you recognize those people. You've seen the news stories, that the scandal with the big publisher who in the newspaper and the tapping and, you know, all these sorts of things that have gone on.
I mean, it is a look into the state of the world today. It is specifically about the media world. It brings up issues about privacy. It brings up issues of information versus entertainment, and how news has become this kind of hungry beast that you have to feed. Especially
and the methods that they use, you know, unethical, unlawful, to gain news that they have no right to. Yeah. I mean, and that is actually when people are breaking laws to get news for the sake of just keeping 24-hour TV going is wrong. And I think that comes across very, very strongly.
But also there's so much at stake. These guys earn squillions for doing this, and people turn a blind eye. So who do you blame, the guy who's done it or the guy who pays him? You know, there's that whole thing as well, isn't there?
Yeah, the guys who's done it.
Well, what about the they must wonder how he gets all this information.
Well, I think that, you know, you can't apportion blame like that. Yes, the person who, but when they find out, actually, when the TV media magnate knows what's happened, that they've got absolute proof of it, they know he's a shady character, but then they have proof of what he's been up to. They're going to pull the plug on him.
Yes, yes, they are.
So I think it's down to that nasty media person who you can't have anything. But he does, in a way, get his comeuppance, thanks to the wonderful Scott, at some stage in the book. The only character that I felt didn't really ring true to me was the husband of Maggie's sister.
Doug.
Doug was really on. I mean, he was worse, actually. I could hate the media TV personality. But Doug, I just thought, you know, you just are not deserving.
He's
just
weak
a
and feeble.
Slug.
Yeah.
But, and go and back grasp, under the stone.
But
yes.
Grasping as well. I mean, being weak and feeble is one thing. But when an opportunity presented itself, he was happy to exploit that child.
Yeah. And I think she had sort of, I think, it explained why she'd married him, which I thought, you see, you don't get that in thrillers. Mm. We had the backstory to why this lovely, lovely lady, Maggie's sister, had actually married this unsavoury slug of a man. And I think in most thriller books, I don't think you'd get that, Yara. You wouldn't get that backstory. Yeah. And she now, her, you know, her eyes were fully opened in the way that I think Maggie's were. I think Maggie, who is married to the TV magnate, was also very, very disappointed and disillusioned with the life that she was now living.
There were a lot of plots. Did you happen to count? I meant to go back and actually count all the plot lines, because there were a lot in the book. So you could follow all sorts of little stories that were going on, which was important because of the nature of, you know, what actually happened. Why did the plane crash happen?
Yeah.
It really gave it a lot more meat.
I mean, I think that why I think this is quite an emotional thriller is that the mystery is solved by telling the backstories of the 11 characters. And so that's how you get to the bottom of what happened.
And also the FBI, their investigation in the end does. But there are quite a range of characters, from the Russian security guard, who was a strange sort of character.
Yeah, even characters that you initially think are minor. Actually.
Yeah, and they're not. And the pilot.
Yes.
The pilot was quite a solitary sort, wasn't he? The pilot was quite a solitary sort. The air stewardess. You see, I find
they all
the
had
women,
a part. They all had a part to play.
Yeah, the women were quite, actually, when the film is there, I think there'll be a lot more made of, and whoever is cast as the women, they will come a lot more to the fore. So I read different things in it. I know exactly what you're saying, Penny.
It wasn't that the women were cliched. It was just that and they were a little bit to me, but I'm not saying that they weren't interesting characters to have developed, which they did. Mm. I'm fine with that. And I do think it's far more visual. But the men treated them all like they were all such arm candy.
Mm.
They all were. All the women were arm candy to all of the men characters.
But Maggie and Scott... Scott did not treat females as arm candy. And
no.
We have that when he was
the only
taken in, slightly, maybe that's the only slightly unbelievable bit, when he's taken in by this millionaireess and there's an incident that happens. And I think he's that comes out in the interview, doesn't it? Where this nasty interviewer says to him, but, you know, come on, how can that be?
Yeah.
It's the sort of the final...
How did you not start up a relationship with her?
Yes, exactly. We're going to take a short break. There'll be more from us talking of books after this.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and we are reviewing our book of the week, Before the Fall by Noah Hawley, which is giving us an awful lot of discussion material. But I'm going to repeat the quiz question again for our listeners who would like to be in the running to win a copy of this week's book of the week, Before the Fall. In Greek mythology, what was the name of the boy who flew too close to the sun and the wax holding his wings together melted? Send in your answers to 4001 and please put your name. And thank you, Marion, for your text. You are also a great fan of Greek mythology books. So that's good. But Yara, you had one clip a bit earlier, but you've got another one. What is that about?
So this is about the fact that... there are so many characters, and that we hear about each of them in a way that's very non-linear, so it feels very kind of flashback-like. And so this is Noah Hawley talking about that structure of writing in that way.
A linear telling of a story is the most interesting telling of the story. So I'm always looking for a way to do something that breaks it up on some level. And in this case, the idea that there's a catalytic event and then two of our characters move forward and the others have stopped moving entirely, but that doesn't mean their stories are over.
Right.
And this idea that we have a list of the dead, you know, which is what we get in these cases, and usually that's what we have. We have the survivors and then we have this list, but in this case, each one of those people provides a potential explanation for what happened. And so the book starts to jump back in time to each of these characters to get to know them and to follow them in the days and hours leading up to the plane, and bringing each one of those characters back onto the plane, maybe going a little further each time, as a way to begin to raise some clues about what might have happened and some speculation about what might have happened. And, you know, to create the scenario by which if we can solve the characters, we can solve the crash, which, as I said earlier, is a more exciting version of a thriller to me.
Yes, I would agree with that. Yeah, it is that the chapters start when we meet each character. It starts with the name of the character, and then there's a little bit about the paintings, which are also enigmatic. You don't really know what you're going to get. Mm. So sort of halfway through the book, you've got Ben Kipling. You get his date of birth and the day of the death in and Sarah Kipling. He's Ben Kipling really has got no charm nor grace whatsoever.
No, I mean, we find out just before he boards the plane that he's about to be indicted for money laundering. Mm. So, and he's made money very quickly, and he seems to be one of those tactless people when it comes to kind of how he presents his own wealth. What I found quite amusing about her is she's constantly trying to make, make him not so tacky when it comes to his wealth. what I liked about that clip is, you know, that he's given flesh to these people, that he's right in real life situations where you see that there have been deaths from an accident like this, you don't get to know the backstories of those people. And there's something quite jarring in the book about kind of getting to know them after you know what their fate has been.
Mm. The way he puts the dates for those chapters. And then you get dotted about, you get these big paintings that just you get a description of, and
Scott's disaster paintings.
Yes. So there's this sort of it is a most unusual, I would say, plot style, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and also the way the plot, because the story develops with each character coming in, and that's how the author manipulates the whole sort of situation and leads you down these paths, which is really clever the way he does that, particularly when he starts pricking your conscience about, oh, well, maybe it's not this, or maybe it's this, or maybe it's that. And you know, you go through with this, what you think are minor characters who land up being very important to the plot.
You know, I read an interview by the author where he says something that's very true. He says human beings are pattern-making animals. They're always looking for meaning. So even when they're looking at the clouds, they're looking for shapes or certain faces in the clouds, etc. And he plays with that idea because he's giving you little bits of information, and as that kind of, you know, tendency of humans to want to, you're making connections of how something has possibly happened, and maybe it is this person who's done it, or he speaks about that the audiences don't just want the facts anymore. They want to understand what they mean. And so the whole time in this book, you're getting facts, but you're also having them filtered in a certain way. And it becomes very subjective. Yeah.
Yeah, it does a little bit, doesn't it? what I particularly enjoyed towards the end of the novel was the staccato information that was coming at you that you were having to grasp, and you had to try and work it all out as it's come, and it was very
visual. The pace
visual.
Changes. The pace changes quite a lot towards the back end of the novel, which I think works really well.
I thought it opened really strongly.
Yeah.
And it closed really strongly.
Yes.
And I have issues with the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, not from the plot.
The women. You were annoyed at the women, aren't you?
Not at the women, but at the way the women are written from a male perspective.
Right.
I don't like the attitude of the characters of the men to women in the novel. And I maybe the author did that on purpose, but I just found them very misogynistic, the men.
Well, you've got Doug, and then you've got the two very rich
the
men.
Husbands, the television.
None of them are particularly likable in their treatment of their wives' family situations. They are, you know. But I think it's quite difficult for the. Well, I think the sister, even if this hadn't happened, she would have escaped really from.
We hope so. Yeah. From Doug.
Yes.
And then you kind of wonder what would happen to Scott, because I believe that this was going to be his big break anyway, that when he took his art to the galleries, as was his plan, that they were going to sell well and this was going to be a big turnaround for him.
Yes.
I like to think that anyway.
Yeah, but I think it was overshadowed straight away
by
this horrific accident, crash, however you like to call it. And also, there is a sort of at the back of your mind thinking about, you know, true cases that you could somehow or other have an alignment with, and that is very scary as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are several theories that come up that emerge about the plane crash, whether it's mechanical failure, pilot error, you know, sabotage, or a specific person has been is being targeted, and then this you know, more unlikely version of Scott Burrows, you know, how ironically he has these disaster paintings, but ultimately it's because people find it difficult to think about the fact that these things can happen randomly, and so people are always trying to search for the why very quickly something happened. And that's what kind of feeds this news cycle.
And the really sort of incredulous part in that Scott and JJ, the little boy, survived.
Yeah.
And the chance happenings that led to them to survive, really.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of the people on that plane were all... you know, died in the crash.
And all that information was presented to you. You know, it was all there for you to see from the beginning, from the descriptions of how everybody gets onto the plane, etc., etc. And yet it's still the way it's revealed. The information is presented, and then the revealing of the circumstances in the plane is very clever.
Tiny little things that at the time you don't count them as something. It's just, you know, in the sentence and it's moving forward. So I don't think you...
So don't you think it was really clever the way that he does that? And they are sitting and hovering in the back of your mind, and when you need them, they do come back. I mean, he was very clever with that as a writer.
So, yeah. Yes, I agree. I agree that those were sort of jigsaw pieces, weren't they, that needed to be there, but they were not in any way obvious. It wasn't, you know, I'll put a red herring here or I'll put...
That's exactly the word I was looking for. So often a writer of this kind of book will give you red herrings. Mm. And then they go nowhere. Mm. These were all very carefully plotted and placed and subtly put in.
And there weren't really any red herrings. It was just that you had to get to know everyone a bit better.
Exactly.
And you went on a journey with them to... and had the black box not been recovered, who knows?
Well, that would have been speculation all the way through.
Yeah. It kind of puts you in the place of an investigator who's being given clues.
Yes.
And sometimes you're piecing things together that later you realise are quite irrelevant.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I had my doubts about who did it, and it was more than one person right through. And they were maybe the there was no reason for me to suspect them, but other than I thought, oh, it must be A or B. And it may be that he'd sort of written about them in a slightly unfavourable light. And I thought, you know, oh, they're going to be the one. Although, of course, any very clever writer as Noah Hawley would not do that. That would be the opposite of what he'd do.
Well, it's that whole discussion about the unreliable narrator. And I think that I thought that he was just too, I liked him too much. I didn't want him to be the guy. But apart from that one thing, it could have been any number of, it really was.
Any number of explanations.
And they were all good. I mean, they were really good, solid explanations. Yes. It wasn't as though they were weak, wishy-washy.
Yeah, no.
They were really good plot, sort of compelling stories.
And there was a lot at stake for a lot of them. So I think that's what makes it believable, is the fact that they are wealthy people who are going to have a lot of wealth left behind that's going to be given to somebody.
Yeah.
Or that one of them is actually going to be indicted, and there are a lot of his clients who do not want that story to come out. So there are a lot of plausible reasons that can set you down one path or another.
I'll just read. This is from the Sunday Times. It was chosen by the Sunday Times as Thriller of the Month, and the the reviewer says, overall, it's hard to imagine a better marriage of genre and literary fiction. Hawley, the creator of the Fargo TV series, combines a thriller's tight structure and addictive narrative with characterization and thematic richness reminiscent of Jonathan Franzen. So that's high praise. And certainly, I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to read it. Obviously, I'm going to read it. But I didn't think I would get as much out of it as I have done. And I keep thinking about Scott and Maggie's sister. You know, that's I'm left with that. And JJ.
And JJ, little
and JJ.
Nothing
is wrapped up neatly. It never would be in a book like this. But then that much more mirrors life than we could expect it to do.
And would you agree that you could tell that it's very much a visual book, that you the fact that he has written screenplays, although obviously five novels as well.
I thought there were so many amazing scenes that I could see. I'm going to repeat the quiz question, then we're going to go for a short break, and I'll bring my question in my mind. I think I might be muddled, but there we go. In Greek mythology, please send us the name of the boy who flew too close to the sun. Please put your name on it as well and send them into 4001. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back with our final segment of Talking of Books after this.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading. From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And we're in our final segment. And I think, certainly from me, I have to say that if you're going on a plane journey and you want a really, really good book, that's going to mean, I don't know whether I should be suggesting this, that it's about a plane crash, but it will get you from the beginning of your journey to the end. You will not want to put this book down. The only proviso, I have to say, that it does involve a plane crash. But hey, there are two survivors.
And it's a private plane.
And it's a private plane. So, you know, it's you're perfectly
different.
Okay. Different. But it really does... there is so much to this novel, and you keep remembering bits, don't you, Yara?
You do, because it's very rich, and you know, it goes beyond just being a suspense novel. It's about characters, it's about certain themes and issues in today's world, and it feels very current because of that, I think. You know, it feels very like we were talking about the kind of the media landscape at the moment.
And the money laundering, all of those
things. All of those things just feel very of the moment, which I think, Noah Hawley as a writer seems to be very of the moment as well, because he's got his hands in so many things that are, living in popular culture at the moment. So, you know, screenplays, films. So Sony actually optioned this as a movie before the books even hit the shelves. And so my understanding is Noah Hawley is actually writing the screenplay, as you would imagine. And so, you know, this book is a movie in the making, very clearly.
And that's
clearly
when writers make an absolute fortune. Yeah. It is. Yeah, someone's just texted in the name of the boy who got too close to the sun. And his father's name was, I can give that away, Daedalus. I don't know how you pronounce that. We've had an awful lot. Thank you, Azar, for that. We've had an awful lot of right answers, haven't we, Penny?
We have indeed. It's great.
Yes. So thank you for all your texts. And I mean, this is for me, it was a really good read, and I would certainly think about reading his previous books. He's written, I think, 3 or 4, hasn't he?
I was wondering, Isabel, actually, since I haven't read a lot of thrillers, I don't know if either of you feel that there are writers that get that balance right between characters and plot. Are there any that you...
That's a tough one, because it's not my genre at all.
There was... it was an historical thriller that was shortlisted or even longlisted for the Booker. And it was about whaling, and it was a thriller. There were murders committed. It was so good.
Yeah.
But can I remember the name?
No, you'll have to give it to me later.
I will.
There was that really great one that was, No. There's been a couple recently which are quite good.
Oh, but also Graham McRae Burnett, who won.
That's it. What was that called?
Did he win?
Yes.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't win.
But that was the big thing.
By,
it was the sellout.
The American writer, the sellout.
But it should have won.
What
now,
was
that
the name
one,
of it? It was Graham McRae Burnett, his shortlisted book for the Booker. And what says it all was that book sold more than any of the others combined on the shortlist and still continues to be a bestseller.
It was a beautiful, actually, that was a beautiful thriller.
Historical fiction, not historical fiction, he made it all up.
Yeah.
But I was so convinced it was a true story that I kept having to research it, and I wasn't alone.
And
because it looked like the writer had actually done all this research into this family and
it was
happened.
So tragic and so sad and so beautiful.
And
so
that had this brilliant book.
Yeah.
But literary, very, very literary. But again,
I can see the cover.
He who was an unreliable narrator.
Completely unreliable.
Completely unreliable, that you in no way could think, well, this or that about him.
Yeah.
Oh, what is the name of
and
that?
And he's actually writing. The book is him writing his sort of confession, if you like, in a way. No, that was beautiful. That was really stunning. Mm. Shall I give a few answers out at this point?
I think
point?
So. We're rapidly running out of time.
Our first question was, apart from being an author, what does Jeff Zenten do? And the answer was, he's a singer and a songwriter. And Sultan Al-Awadi, you have won a book from the Emirates Literature Foundation offices. Our second question, and this is obviously to do with the fact that we're just about ending the month, the holy month of Ramadan, is in the Islamic calendar, name the month that follows Ramadan. And the answer is Shawwal. I think, Yaro, I've got that pronunciation right. And the winner is Maryam Yazadi, I think it is. And we'll be contacting you again with a book from the Litfest offices. Our third question, in Greek mythology, what was the name of the boy who flew too close to the sun on the wings of feathers and wax? And the answer is, of course, Isabel.
Icarus. An amazing story. If you've not read the story of Daedalus and Icarus, please do, because it is a fantastic, and it's the sort of story children will absolutely love. They do children's versions of the, obviously, Greek mythology. You wouldn't want the adult versions, but the children's one. And the name of the book that we are both recommended is His Bloody Project.
That's it.
By Graham McRae Burnett. An absolutely amazing thriller.
It's beautiful.
It is a thriller, but you learn about, it's Robbie, isn't it? Robbie McRae. And you think that he must be a relative of the author and things like that, because you have all the testimonies going back that he gave to the police while he was in jail and what happened. It was just incredible.
Can I just say the winner is Asim, who got Icarus correct. Just get that in there quickly.
So that is the recommendation. If you want a literary thriller and a book that you might forget the title, but you will never forget the characters. It was heartbreaking because they lived in the Scottish Highlands And he's brought in a lot of the laws of the time. So the laird, the lord of the manor, owned a seaweed on the beach. So if you collect even seaweed to feed your, you know, your poor little, or use it on your land to enrich it, he could take it away from you, or he could charge you for it. So there were some fascinating facts in that
very
book.
Much sort of serfdom kind of relationship that went on.
There was,
and it was fine as long as things were going right. But when something went wrong, it was just tragic. And the language was just so beautiful. Yeah.
And it was so it was so sparse, you know, their lives, you know, what they had in their lives. It made you really feel that you were in that moment. Mm. So it should have won the Booker. Oh, for heaven's sake. It wasn't. It was The Sellout by Paul Beattie.
Paul Beattie. Mm. I mean, I enjoyed both of them for very different reasons.
Yeah. It was I didn't enjoy that at all. What I did enjoy was the one we read together, the Underground Railway, by Colson Whitehead. I still have to get over it, I would say.
Yeah, that
book's
the
left.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Pulitzer Prize winner. It's left such a scar on me, thinking about those, you know, the people and their inheritors, you know, the people who came from the lineage of those people. How can you ever get over that, really? I mean, it must somehow or other leave a mark on
I think that's the whole point, is that it does, and it has, and in the world it's a big deal.
So I'd like to thank all of our reviewers today, thank my co-host Penny McKenzie, thank Elaine, our wonderful technical producer, and thank Yara Badri, who has been our lead reviewer on this book, our Book of the Week, fully recommended by Noah Hawley, Before the Fall. We'll be back after Eid with more talking of books. I'm halfway through our Book of the Week for next week. It is a non-fiction book. It's called If I Could Tell You Only One Thing. So we'll be telling you lots of one things from that book next Saturday. Until then, everyone, we wish you a pleasant and blessed and peaceful Eid. Goodbye from Talking of Books.
Book of the Week, what you should be reading.
This is Talking of Books here on Dubai Eye 103.8.